would like to continue a little bit on the subject of discipline of children. I may just be preaching to myself and Noah and Mary right now, but for some reason I've had this subject coming to my mind a bunch, and I feel like there's a lot of misinformation in the Christian world on the subject. There's a lot of misunderstanding, and that's kind of what I've been trying to deal with a little bit. And I think tonight I'd like to deal with another aspect that I think there's been highly mistaught subject. The idea that I want to talk about is when to teach children without discipline. Many times it seems to me, by a lot of the teaching on the subject of raising children, that the focus is discipline. And in my opinion, discipline should be the rarity in the training of our children. It is absolutely necessary. We cannot raise good kids without it. But it should never be the focus. The focus of teaching and training and raising our children should be to teach them. Beginning, of course, with being the kind of people that we should be. Giving them a proper example to see. But should say, not only then giving them the proper example to see, but then the spending the time with them that any person needs to have spent with them to learn a certain thing. I guess before we go any further than that, let's go to Psalm 103 and read the psalm. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfieth thy mouth with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. The Lord executeth righteousness and judgment for all that are oppressed. He made known his ways unto Moses, his acts unto the children of Israel. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and plenteous in mercy. He will not always chide, neither will he keep his anger forever. He hath not dealt with us after our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. For as high as the heaven is above the earth, so great is his mercy toward them that fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far hath he removed our transgressions from us. Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. For he knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. As for man, his days are as grass, as a flower of the field, so he flourisheth. For the wind passeth over it, and it is gone. And the place thereof shall know, it no more. But the mercy of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting upon them that fear him, and his righteousness unto children's children, to such as keep his covenant, and to those that remember his commandments to do them. The Lord hath prepared his throne in the heavens, and his kingdom ruleth over all. Bless the Lord, ye his angels, that excel in strength, that do his commandments, hearkening unto the voice of his word. Bless ye the Lord, all ye his hosts, ye ministers of his that do his pleasure. Bless the Lord, all his works, in all places of his dominion. Bless the Lord, O my soul. This entire psalm is taken up with blessing a master for who he is. He hasn't dealt with us according to what we deserve. He hasn't given us all the spankings we needed. He hasn't rewarded us according to our iniquities. He has given and given and given and given and given mercy and grace and kindness and protection and on and on and on the list goes. And because of everything that God is to us, we turn to Him and bless His name. And directly in the middle of the psalm, we have one verse that I came to this psalm for that says, like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear Him. Now I'm going to rewrite this verse. Okay? Because according to the way some people teach discipline of children, this verse should read, like as the Lord does not pity us, we should not pity our children. Have you ever got that out of any discipline of children sermons that you have heard? Or have you ever witnessed a father who believed that verse that way? Like as the Lord does not pity us, so we should not pity our children. Actually, the matter of fact is, God uses the way that a father pities his children as to be a picture that we can understand how He thinks about us. And sometimes we are taught in conservative Christian churches that we should be tougher than that, that we should be more exacting than that with our children, that we should be hard on them, that we should be disciplinarians, they call us, and we should hold the line. Clearly hold the line. Don't let your children get away with anything. Every single time they ever disobey you, they should get spanking. I believe that to a large degree, actually. But not when it goes along with the rest of so much of what is taught on discipline. Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear Him. For He knoweth our frame. He remembereth that we are dust. Now let me tell you something. When God was speaking to Jonah about Nineveh, in the fourth chapter of Jonah, the last verse of the book, verse 11, God says, and should not I spare Nineveh, that great city, wherein are more than 60,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left, and also much cattle? Not only does God remember that we are dust, but He remembers that there is such a thing as little dust. There were 120,000 people in the city of Nineveh that didn't know which their left or their right hand was. And God is holding out a different idea about these people. They were all sinners. God in times judged the world, like when the flood came, and God took out every person on the face of the earth, including the babies. It is appointed to man once to die, the Bible says. Every human being on the face of the earth is a sinner and is going to die. God did not have to spare the city for the 120 children there that didn't know the difference between their right and left hand. But He understood, He shows us that He understood there that there is a difference between an adult and a child. And so, when we are dealing with children, they should be given a very special treatment. For example, let me put this into an adult situation. If I hired somebody to come and work at Golden Harvest that was 42 years old, and they came in there with a cell phone, and a mentality of, I'm going to get through the day to get my paycheck. And they could not be without their phone. And we told them, no, we don't allow cell phones in the store while you're working. You can't carry it around with you. You need to leave it in your car or in your locker or something. And he said, can you please make an exception for me? Because my wife needs to get a hold of me 6 or 7 times an hour. And she's got questions and I need to talk to her. And you know, and he just kind of had that attitude. You know how long he would last? Well, according to Golden Harvest policies, he would probably last a couple months because we usually give people a chance. He should last 1 hour and be sent home. But we try to give people a chance. But you know, when a 17-year-old, fresh in the workplace, still in high school, having no sense about anything in the world, starts at the store with the same attitude, you treat them completely different. We need a year to teach this child what life is. They haven't had a chance. They've never. This may be their first job. They may have. They may never have had an occasion to have a parent who loved them and cared about them and taught them how to be a decent citizen. We can take this person and give them some mercy because of who they are. I think that sometimes parents have the idea that we need to treat children as though they are morally responsible human beings. And you know, the Bible doesn't treat children that way. The Bible does not treat children as though they are morally responsible human beings. We are on a mission to train our children, not punish them. And the training that we want to do, we want to turn them into morally responsible human beings that have character, good work ethic, can make proper decisions, and that love God and their parents. And there is the number one thing that we so often lose when we try too hard. We lose their love for God and their parents. There is a verse. Let me just give you an example of something that I have heard numerous times in my life. There's a verse in Proverbs chapter 22, verse 15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. Now I know for a fact that there are God-fearing parents all over the United States that believe that this verse means when you find your children jumping on the bed, even if you have never told them not to jump on the bed before, you spank them to teach them they should not jump on the bed. Now, I hope that I never get confined in a small room with that father and a stick in my hand, because I might not be able to resist giving him something for his foolishness. Let me tell you something about what this verse means. We go to the Hebrew word on page 30 in your Hebrew lexicon that you guys are all carrying along with you, your Hebrew concordance rather. I'll give you the bulk of the different verses that this word is used in the Old Testament. Psalm 69, O God, thou knowest my foolishness. Proverbs 5, in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. So, Proverbs 13, but a fool layeth open his folly. Proverbs 14, but the foolish plucketh it down with his hands. You know, the wise man buildeth his house, but the fool plucketh it down. Proverbs 14, again, but the folly of fools is deceit. Verse 17, same chapter, he that is soon angry dealeth foolishly. Same chapter, the simple inherit folly. The foolishness of the fools is folly. Hasty of spirit exalteth folly. The mouth of the fools poureth out foolishness. The mouth of the fools feedeth on foolishness. Folly is joy to him that is destitute of. The instruction of fools is folly. Rather than a fool in his folly, I believe this is the verse that says it's better to meet a bear robbed of her whelps than a fool in his folly. The foolishness of a man perverteth his way. The thought of foolishness is sin, and then we come to Proverbs chapter 22. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, and we interpret that jumping on a bed. Now listen here, guys. If you don't want your children to jump on the bed, that is just fine. But we need to teach the children they may not jump on the bed. And we need to understand that there is a whole class of things that are like jumping on the bed that children are going to do. It is bound in the heart of a child. That kind of foolishness, funniness, doing silly things, having a great time, understanding what you should actually be in life compared to some adults who have lost it. That is bound in the heart of a child, and the Bible never told us that the rod of correction should drive that from them. It is still okay if you are an adult to jump on your bed if you want to. It is okay. Now you may think that's a rude way to treat a bed, and you may not do it anymore, and that's okay if that's your choice. But it's not wrong. It's not foolishness, according to Proverbs chapter 22. It is foolishness for a foolish father to believe that God is talking about jumping on a bed in that verse. Children need to play. They need to do fun things. They need to get in trouble. They need to go upstairs in a big house on Calvin Street in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in a 5-bedroom house with 2 rolls and a bowl. They need to break those rolls up into little crumbs in the bowl and get up on the dressers and frisbee them out across the room. That's what makes a good adult. Now you say, I'm not going to let my kids do that. You know what? I'm not going to let my kids do that either. But if I catch them doing that, I can tell you one thing for certain, they're not going to get spanked for it unless they are older and have been told very clearly this is something we don't do. Then we're spanking not for throwing rolls out across the bedroom. Then we're spanking for disobedience to our word, which is a serious issue. You know, you can, as Ezra preached this morning on Friends, you can establish yourself over your children as a mother or a father or a friend or as an enemy. You can, when your child is born and when he is 6 months old, you can start very sternly, very strictly establishing authority over him at 6 months old, and they will respond if you know what you're doing. Some people, when they try at the baby stage, make monster messes. But if you want to do it and you're good at what you're doing, you can establish a lot of authority at 6 months old. But you know what you're actually supposed to be establishing yourself as at 6 months old? Is a nurse, a friend, a lover, a father, a mother, somebody who knows that this baby is 6 months old, That's what you're supposed to be establishing yourself as. There are people who have gifts in certain things in life more than others. Some girls are born so beautiful that when they're 11 years old, every guy on the face of the earth that meets them wants to marry them. Some girls don't have that problem. Now, it doesn't mean they're not pretty, but they don't have every guy on the face of the earth chasing them when they're 11. Some people can be mechanics. Some people cannot. Some people can do carpenter work. Some people cannot. Some people can cook, and some people cannot. You all believe cooking is something anybody can do, but I can tell you I know people who have cooked for years and still can't. Some people can take their child, and I know a specific person, if you want to, Ann Beorley was a person. After she had had a number of kids, she could take her baby to church and have him sitting quiet in church at 9 months old. Now, you know what? If Ann Beorley can do that, does not mean that that is the standard. Because you might try and find out that you don't have one-tenth the gift that she has. And I can tell you one thing also. She didn't do it with discipline either. She never used discipline. She used her own personal manner of training that I don't have. Nikki doesn't have. I heard recently that people have laughed at my family because our kids don't know how to sit in church. I have a 3-year-old boy now who can't sit in church. I mean, I'm serious, he can't. I'm not lying, he can't. He can lay in church with his feet up. He can squat in church. He can hang off his chair. But he can't sit. Now, you know what? He could right now if we had taught him to. But I chose not to because I don't care if he lays on his chair. It's all right. I did teach him to be quiet, but not till he was old enough to understand what it meant. He's not allowed to make noise. But it's okay for a little boy to lay on his chair with his feet up. It's okay. Now, Dale, if you have anything to say about it, you can preach next Sunday night, okay? Let me tell you something. There are families all over, especially big families, who have a strong sense of discipline in the family. That any time you ever meet them, every single child in the family looks the picture of absolute perfection. You would think that that family doesn't have sinners for kids. Everything is absolutely perfect. And you know, I personally believe that that manner of family running raises children who are whitewashed. Because it does keep the outside very whitewashed, but while it does it, it puts mud in the center. Because the very method that is used to make the family that perfect does not make for a good relationship between mommy and daddy and the children. Let's talk for a little bit about school. You know, you can establish yourself as a friend or an enemy. to your children when they're 6 months old, when they're 1 year old, when they're 2 years old, when they're 3 years old, when they're 5 years old, when they're 15 years old. You can establish yourself as either an enemy or a friend to them. But you can do that to anybody that you are over on earth. You can do that as a young man trying to court a girl. You can do that as a pastor of a church. You can do that as a king over a nation. You can do that as a boss over your employees. You can do that as a teacher over your students. In the United States of America, we have taken as our basic policy that children begin learning at 5 years old. Now we do some things we call preschool. Well, we start teaching reading, writing, arithmetic, and all the other rotten stuff that goes along with it in schools at about 5 years old. Now, as a matter of fact, it is true that any child of normal intelligence can begin learning a lot of that stuff by two. There are children all over the place that can read at 3 years old. You can easily get the alphabet down and have a child start recognizing words when he is 2 years old. Should we do it, is the question. Should we do it? And if we shouldn't do it, why shouldn't we? Let me tell you how I know whether we should or shouldn't do it. Why I would decide if we should or shouldn't do it. Okay, if Mama has time coming out of her ears to spend with the kids, and she's going to play with him, she can choose different things that we're going to play with. We can play train, we can play doll, we can play roughhouse, we can play learn to read. If Mom's going to do one of those things, and the child loves the learn to read as well as he loves any other thing because it's with Mama who has established herself over him as a friend, they can sit down and they can have a grand old time, and that child might learn to read by the time he is 3 years old. That's a very reasonable possibility. But the neighbor over here views this woman who taught her child to read by the time he was three as a threat to her because her child doesn't even know what A and B are, and he's four. And so she determines with this next baby that's coming, she's going to do what that mother did. This woman over here now, she's a strict disciplinarian kind of a woman. And so when this next baby is born, he gets to be about 23 months. And she says, all right, it's time to start. We're going to learn the alphabet. Now, an hour a day, we're going to sit down on these two chairs, me on the big one, you on the little one. You are not going to talk unless I ask you a question. I'm going to tell you what you're going to do. We are learning the alphabet. She's failed. We are not learning the alphabet. We are going to spend many, many, many hours over the course of the next months learning what submission to Mama is. We are going to have hundreds and hundreds of spankings because baby isn't going to do what Mama says. He's going to fidget. He's going to get off his chair. He's going to talk. He's going to jabber. He is not going to say that is B when Mama says, what is this letter? Because he is going to feel stubborn and rebellious towards his mama. Why? Because Mama pushed him too hard. Mama pushed him beyond his age. It has nothing to do with whether or not he could or couldn't learn the alphabet. It was the fact that Mama established herself over him as an enemy. Now, if you want to play with your kids and teach them to learn to read when they're 2 years old, go ahead and do it. They'll probably absolutely have a blast with you, and they'll probably learn a lot. But you can't take that child and put them in school at 2 years old because they couldn't do it. It would destroy them. don't think that if you try to do it on a friendship level and it doesn't work, that there's anything wrong with you or your child just because somebody else did it. Because not everybody has exactly the same gifts or talents. Teaching a very young child oftentimes is a talent that people with children with gift, children-oriented gifts have. Not everybody can do that. There are people who have different brains, too. Different types of brains. Some children's brains react to math. I mean, in sync with math. They understand it. They're mathematically inclined. Other children, math is the hardest thing they ever go through in life. Is it right for a father to spank his daughter because she can't get her math right? No. But they have. They have done it. Now, the real problem here is because we oftentimes mix different things together in one lump that require discipline. For example, once the mother sits down in front of the son and says, "Son, you are to sit here for 1 hour. We are learning to read, and you may not talk unless I ask you a question, and you must sit on your chair." Once she has done that, she has just put herself in a position where she is required to discipline him if he won't listen to her. Because you cannot ask something of your child and not enforce it without teaching the fact that you have no authority and there are no consequences to disobedience. So for that reason, we need to back off our children sometimes. Just let them be. If they are not learning math well at 5 years old, maybe you want to pull it out of their grade. There's nothing wrong with saying, "Listen here, you come to the kitchen and bake bread with me. We'll learn math when you're 6. Because you're not ready for it." There's nothing wrong with that. If you want to try to work through it with them, there's nothing wrong with that either. But if you say you have to get all those answers right on your page or you're having a spanking, get out of my sight because I'm going to probably spank you next time I meet you, Papa. I mean, I don't think I have any authority to, but I probably won't be able to resist it. And if I can't help it, I can't be condemned for what I can't help. We have heard from the pulpits of this church, my dad preached this, the basic idea that if you have a kid that's really bad, you need to give them situations to give them tests for their obedience. You need to tell them, "You can't do such and such a thing," and then watch them. Make sure they listen to you. To give them a test so that you can have a confrontation with them and teach them obedience. Now, I believe that what he taught on that was correct, but I don't think anybody who ever learned it from him did the right thing with it. The principle of creating confrontations to see if somebody will obey you or not is all throughout the scriptures. God did that with man over and over and over and over again. He gave them a test to see if they would follow him or not. He told them specifically in the Old Testament that if a prophet came and says, "We should go follow these other gods, and here's a sign that we should." And God says, if the prophet says that and the sign that he says comes to pass, he says, "I'm testing you to see if you'll listen to me or not." But I want to bring up an example of a test that God gave in the scriptures. One specific example that we all know. It's the example of Abraham. When God said to Abraham, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, and go offer him for burnt offering in the place where I'll show thee." And Abraham obeyed. He passed the test. I want to bring this down to something more clear of the process of training. You know, many years before that day, God had said to Abraham, "Get out of your father's house, out of your country, and go to a land that I will show you." It was the very first thing that God said to Abraham. The very first command. Abraham listened. That made God and Abraham friends at that point, because Abraham was willing to follow God. Then God came to him a little time after that, and he said, "Abraham, look up at the stars. See if you can count them. That's the way your seed's going to be. I'm going to give you a son, and through your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed." Now I want you to back up. Go back to Abraham's time. You're Abraham now. You heard that voice speak to you. "I'm going to have a son. My seed's going to be as the sand of the sea." 9 months later, a little boy is born. And he grows up a few years old. And then God comes to you and he says, "Now, Abraham, take your son, your only son Isaac, and go offer him for a burnt offering." How many of you think Abraham would have done what God said? Now, you know, I don't know, and I'm not going to pretend to say, but my personal opinion is he would have failed the test. Because you see, you have to teach things in order, one step at a time. And God needed 25 years from the time that he said to Abraham, "I'm going to give you a son," till the time that that son was born. God needed those 25 years in place to establish beyond the shadow of any doubt in Abraham's mind who God was and the faithfulness that God had and the fact that he was absolutely reliable and his word was certain. God needed those 25 years to teach Abraham who God was so that he could say to Abraham, "Take your son," and Abraham would take his son. And so many times as Christian parents, we start at that point. Go offer your son for a burnt offering. And we haven't done the 25 years of training that God does before he asks something of us that we don't have the personal ability in our bodies to handle. There is no child on the face of the earth, I don't care how bratty they are by birth, there is no child on the face of the earth that can take a strong disciplinarian parent when they are 1.5 years old, 1 year old, maybe even 2 years old. And react to that properly. They can't do it. They don't need strong disciplinarian parents at that point. They just need a father and a mother to nurse and to pity and to take care of them. And to begin the teaching process. Now, don't you dare believe that a child under 2 years old is too young to spank. They're old enough to spank when they're about 9 months. They're old enough to spank when they can understand. But don't push them. There is no reason under the face of the earth to put your child in a house full of no-nos when they're 15 months old and say, "Don't touch that, don't 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 touch that. And now I know you understand because you responded to me when I said no, you pulled your hand back. And so now I expect that you can't touch any of this stuff in this house, and when we do, we're going to have a spanking. You have just set yourself in motion to have a lifetime of spankings with that child. What you do when they're 15 months old is you pick up all the stuff out of the reach of a 15-month-old. Besides maybe a couple of things that can't be moved that you might start with as no-nos. And you might not even start with those. Like, for example, the oven. Okay, so mama's cooking in the kitchen. And the 15-month-old is crawling out into the kitchen. And Mama opens the oven door, and it's hot in there. And the 15-month is crawling towards the oven. Now, Mama could take the time to teach the child that the oven is a no-no. But what's the point? Why? Why don't you just pick the child up, carry them out in the other room, and set them down in a place of safety? There is no point in trying to teach the concept of a hot oven that's open right now, but normally isn't hot and normally isn't there. There's no point in trying to confuse that little mind with the fact that I can't touch this oven and there's no apparent reason why. And that child is going to wander around your kitchen for the next year of its life, following Mama around all the time when that oven is not hot. It's going to touch everything in there, and he's going to be confused about why Mama doesn't even bother with telling him the oven is a no-no most of the time, but once in a while he gets a spanking for touching it when it's hot. There's no point. It's stupidity. Let the child be a child. There's no point in trying to teach a child something that is over their age. Because you know, when that child gets to be about 3 years old, 4 years old, you don't even need to ever tell them not to touch the oven when it's hot. They know what hot is. They've experienced it once or twice in their life. They can feel it when they get close enough to it. They understand the pain it causes, and they won't touch it. And you just trained your children not to touch an oven without ever spanking them one time for it. You established yourself as a teacher and a friend instead of as an enemy. That's teaching children without discipline. Once you tell them no about something and they start disobeying you, discipline is necessary at that point because you must establish authority. You must not let them do something that you have told them they can't do, or you undermine the whole foundation of you being a parent over them that can discipline them. But the bulk of everything that we will ever teach our children should be without discipline at the proper age when they are old enough to learn it. And let the discipline be for things that are evil. For example, you may have a child who is prone, just prone, to bite. He's wearing a Thomas Train shirt right there in the front seat of the church. He was so prone to bite when he was a baby. I never had a kid like it before. Now, he may not have even understood at the very earliest stages what he was doing. But he definitely understood shortly afterwards that biting is what you do to a sister when she is in the way. And he definitely understood that. You can't let a child get away with being a rotten brat. So he got disciplined for it. And quite a few times. But you know, that's necessary. He has to know that inflicting pain on another human being because your way was crossed is evil all the time for anybody at any age. He has to learn that. He does not have to learn that he can't touch the oven when it's hot when he's 15 months old. His mother can just take care of him. You know, that's not necessary to teach him that. It's not moral. So there are times, I do believe there are times, to put your children to a test. If you're struggling with a child, lying is one of the hardest things. Watch them do something, and then go ask them if they did. See if they lie or not. And if they do, well, here is a clear situation where you absolutely must exercise discipline. It's time for trouble in the family. But there's no reason to push a child out of his comfort level when he's just a little baby. There's no reason that a child can't Just be a baby. There's no reason that a 15-year-old can't jump on the bed. There's no reason. I'm not going to disagree with you if you hold it as a policy for your 15-year-old that he can't jump on the bed. Okay, it's fine. If that's your household policy, it's fine. But there's no reason to push your kids so hard as to not let them be children anymore. When your child is 6 months old, he learns to talk. He starts saying things that nobody but himself knows what he's saying. And you don't really have any way to communicate with him yet, because he doesn't really know what you're saying the bulk of the time either. And many parents feel like, well, it's time to start teaching this child to sit quiet in church. No, it's not. It's time to take that child out of the place where quietness is necessary and let him be a baby. That's what it is time for. You can't make a baby an adult. Well, you can, actually. But it's a you've got about 18 years to do it in. Most of the time it takes a little longer than that. You should try to get it in 18 years. You've got 18 years to do it. Don't try to push it all into the first 3 years. Because what's going to happen is you create a situation where, in Romans, we're told, when the law came, sin revived and I died. You know, when there was no law, we weren't half as tempted to do the things that were against the law as we are now that there's a law. But now that there's a law hanging over our heads, it's like it's built into us that we must disobey it. And you get a bad kid, and you become friends with a bad kid. They will listen to what you say to them because you are their best friend almost all the time. But you get a bad kid, and you become an enemy to them, they will become a much worse kid, and they will look for reasons to take their bad nature and use it against you. And many, many, many parents experience that in raising children, where their children just turn against them because the parent has been unreasonable with them. Not coherent, not nice, not a friend. And we start with these hard, tough lines of discipline. Gonna make my child shine in church. You know, Jesus doesn't want your child to shine in church. Jesus wants your child to be a child. Okay? If he had wanted your child to shine in church, he would have made them shiny. Alright? And I think oftentimes, many times the reason that parents start too young pushing their kids is because of the parents' pride. It's not because they want their kid to be right. It's because they want their family to look good. That's wrong. So there is, in my opinion, it is good to start with discipline with your children before they're 2 years old. But it is best to keep that discipline down to the things that it absolutely must be for. Keep that discipline down to things that are on an absolute moral level, things that are right or wrong. And don't try to start making your children understand and act like a 12-year-old when he's 15 months or 16 months or 24 months. There's no reason that he needs to be older than he is at that age. It's okay to just let him be a baby. Teach that child to be what you want him to be without discipline, except in necessary cases. You become a friend. He becomes an absolute admirer of you. You don't have misunderstandings, which parents do this wrong all the time, because when you're starting at a really young age and you're trying to push your child forward, you make too many mistakes as a parent. There's too many times you think that your child is understanding what's happening and they are lost. You aren't on the same level. They are not understanding what you are asking. They don't know what you are saying. And all they know is that my mama beats me. They don't know what to do with the idea. But my mama beats me. My mama gets mad at me and beats me. And when you start out in a relationship like that with your children, you're going to have to do a lot of redeeming. You're going to have to do a lot to re-get that child to trust you again. All right. With that, we'll dismiss.